The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain. I want to tell you about a service I've been using for over a year now, Aurora. I signed up and they immediately identified over 60 data brokers out there selling my information. The best part is they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. I have a link down below where you get a 14-day free trial. It's risk-free and you can cancel anytime. So it's worth taking a shot and seeing what information is out there. But it's more than just that. They have an app which includes antivirus, VPN, password management, all built into one package. You can use the app or you can use the browser to stay safe out there in the digital space. Again, I have a link down below. You can check it out for 2 weeks free. And if you don't like it, you can cancel anytime.
Want to make a podcast? Let me tell you about Spotify's program for podcasters. And it's called Spotify for Podcasters. I've been using it for over a year now. Couldn't be happier from the Switch. You can record wherever you create podcasts, whether it be your phone, computer, and it's easy to upload it and distribute it to everywhere podcasts are heard. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. Best of all, Spotify for Podcasters is completely free. So launch your podcast today. Get started with Spotify for Podcasters. Go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
The Afterburn Podcast is brought to you by BogeyDope.com. Interested in a career in military aviation or civilian aviation? Let those who've walked the path guide you through the process and land the dream job. Click the link down below to take you to BogeyDope.com. You can use Afterburn for 5% off. Wingman Watches, founded by a fighter pilot. Create a custom, unique timepiece that's one of a kind for your organization, or find one of the many awesome designs they already have out there. Use the code RAIN10 for 10% off or mention my name for a discount on your custom build.
Altitude.
Tower to my stations, release to you, runway 4 left, wind 040 at 5, clear for takeoff.
Seat tied, Altitude 0 eyes, we're clear for takeoff, clear for the airspace.
Fire protect clear.
My program curve was at 354.
Viper 01, be advised, the restricted 6002 is still active.
Sir, yeah, flight's on.
Next, picture
610, 13,000. Viper 1
targeted. Welcome back. Excited for today's podcast. Vader and Bender from the Kodiak Shack jump back for a bro chat. Everyone seemed to really enjoy that. There might be a kid or two in this podcast. It turns out that Bender's pretty busy, and when he can lend his time, which is limited, there might be a kid or two. Still, it's a great conversation. Everyone seemed to really enjoy these bro chats. So we're back to do it again. As always, thanks to my Patreon supporters for supporting the podcast and helping the podcast grow. You can become a Patreon supporter and get exclusive content by clicking the link down in the show notes below. But at a minimum, if you're liking this content, drop a rating or review over iTunes and Spotify. If you leave a comment, again, I read those. I appreciate those. It helps the podcast out. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast either via Patreon or dropping a rating or review. With that being said, let's jump into the episode with Vader and Bender.
There's so many possibilities, I suppose.
That's true. Yeah. Hey everybody, we haven't decided how we're going to do the intro, so we're going to do it live. First thing I have to talk about is why is it always Navy pilots that see UAPs or unidentified flying or airborne phenomena, and Air Force guys seem to be not as worried about that. But maybe that's just me. What do you think, Rain?
That's a great point. You know, because I've never heard anyone who's like, dude, I got to tell you about this. I was out in the airspace, or I was over Iraq, and you know, this UAP, as they now call it, popped up and was flying around. I have no idea what it was. My theory is that after 9 months on a boat with 5,000 dudes, you just start to see things. That's what I think it is. Yeah. Although I will say that thing, was it like Joe Rogan? I think Commander Farver. Yeah. Is that how you seeing the targeting pod footage of that tic tac moving around? If that's a real thing, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. I have my theories. I have a lot of theories about it. I don't know how many I can talk to, but we'll go this way. Do you? Because so they had that Commander Fravor guy on Joe Rogan, which, again, why is it always Navy guys that go on a show with like 11 million people to hear him talk about their UFO conspiracies? But either way, the we'll see what everybody thinks. So from some military branch or other than human made, what do you guys think?
I give it to Bender. I mean, you know, I'm not like super well versed with this stuff. Not that anyone is.
Yeah.
But also kind of cynical. I'm like, again, you know, it is only the Navy guys that pop up and do this stuff.
I'm going to go, it's military, for the sheer fact that, like, I just imagine they're not telling people the whole truth. You know, that is my expectation.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, you see, we didn't know about the B-2. We didn't know about the F-117. That stuff was essentially designed late 70s, early 80s technology. And it's pretty impressive, in my humble opinion. And now, I mean, if you just look at from what we operated when we were in high school, we had a Nokia phone. And then, you know, 2007 pops up, iPhone. It's completely changed the world. I'm thinking that there's smart people buried underground somewhere that fly off, you know, every week, and they're just doing all this work. And I'll jump to, because you guys, I think we mentioned last time, Rush Fulkerson. You know, he was a FAPE with us. He was in the 41st, Viper dude, test pilot. And I know he was going to get out of the Air Force as a test pilot, and a job popped up somewhere in the world. And the guy who's like, who's doing it, he's like, dude, I can't tell you anything about it other than it's the best job you'll ever have in your entire life. And then Rush went off and disappeared. And then he would respond to text messages like 3 days late or 2 weeks late. Or his wife was like, hey, he's gone right now. I imagine he was flying some really cool stuff or doing things. So
I would hope so.
I don't know. Technology. There's gotta be some really cool toys that are just hidden there. We don't know about.
Yeah. Well, everybody, cause I did a terrible intro, cause we're just kind of getting into it. Obviously it's Rain Waters from the Afterburn podcast. We've got Vader here from the Kodiak Shack podcast, and Bender as a regular staple in these bro chats. This is volume 3. If you were unaware, and we've got Bender, who's being oddly silent here.
I can't talk about that kind of stuff. I've seen the UFOs.
There we go.
Maybe you spend some time with them. Just kidding.
I think, you know, maybe Bender joined the Navy. That's what we're experiencing here, because apparently it's only Navy guys doing this. But
I think
if
it's
anybody
a question of sensors.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys wear Mexican radar. You don't get to see anything.
That's true. We don't even see the adversaries who we're supposed to see in an APG-68. And anybody who's seen the F-22 Raptor demo, which Rain and I watched it at McIntyre when it was doing.
Yeah.
You watch that thing maneuver and you're like, that's a UFO. That's, humans cannot make a machine that maneuvers like that. So I have faith that they can build whatever there is out there.
This does not make sense. Speaking of McIntyre, I was out there with those guys this past weekend. I heard that you interviewed some of them for the Guns Garand Memorial Foundation. I was out there doing a bunch of stuff with them. We hung out on drill weekend. We might or might not have had one of our camera guys get in a little bit of trouble with some of this videoing, but they fixed it. You know, life was good, but it spiced it up a little bit on Sunday.
Well, I want to hear about that. That sounds good.
Yeah, you know how things like
security forces.
Yeah, so someone said F in front of mom, but they might have just gotten one angle they weren't supposed to get, but the jet wasn't running. Like, life was going to be okay. But I'd slowly watched this thing evolve. So it was like during the launch out there, guys are stepping in the jets. They're getting a bunch of B-roll footage of these guys stepping in the jets, and then you can see the security forces truck roll around. Then the security forces gets out and like talks to him. Then he comes over and talks to me. And it's like, okay, it's gonna be good. And the best part of this too, you guys know Mosey. Mosey is like perma top 3 out there. So he's sitting at the desk for those listening, and just, he's kind of managing. Like, if there's something happens at the airfield, he relays it to the guys. If there's maintenance issues, he relays between the jets and maintenance. He's the corner. He's the backbone of this operation, but he became the lightning rod for this whole thing too. So he's had to deal with security forces, review footage and all this stuff. It ended up being like a 2-hour ordeal. Again, it worked out, like, common sense prevailed, but it was, it was a little bit painful, and then also reminded me of like just the shenanigans that can happen. And you're just like, man, I told the story. So I was like, demo days, right? We would be out there video and taking photographs all the time out at Shaw. And the maintenance guys would just call it in. Like, I would be the approving authority down there at the demo ramp. I'm sitting at my desk, and I just, my back's to the window to the flight line. And I just see flashing blue lights. And like, I look back, and they have our public affairs guy in handcuffs on the ground. I'm like, oh man, this is not good. I guess I better go out there. So I go out there and I'm talking to the cops. I'm like, hey, yeah, he's authorized to do this. Like, what's going on? Like, well, sir, no one called in the photo pass and he's out here taking photos. I'm like, we literally do this like four times a week, if not five times a week. The pass was called in. Like, I'm the approving authority. Can we just like say, whoops, okay, there was like a little miscommunication. We're good to go. Like, no, sir, we got to take him in. So they took him into the, you know, the station. Like, it was, again, like 2 hours he's held there. I'm like, here's what's going to happen. Like, I'm going to call the group commander. Group commander's going to call the security MSG commander, mission support group commander who owns security forces. And it's just going to like, it's just going to take up everyone's day. And it's like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Can we just move past this? Like, no. So there's a little bit of that this weekend, but you know, what can you do?
Well, I think McIntyre's a little on edge. You know, they just got upgraded Saber radars, you know? So yeah. Now they're like probably really sketchy. Like, oh man, like people are trying to pull one over on the old mighty Viper jet.
Yeah. There's no way.
It's funny, you know, I understand that like security forces, you don't get to make your, you know, make like real time decisions. Like there are rules and security forces has to stick by them. This is not a story bagging on security forces. This is a story bagging on the Air Force, just if anybody is unclear.
Yeah, but if you start it that way, it sounds like we're going to bag on security
forces. It's like, well,
with, I'm bagging with all on due one respect. Security forces guy? Yeah, exactly. Prepare to be disrespected. So Bender and I, and maybe Rain, you met him, but Compton was one of our buddies in Japan, and he's driving around Japan. On a base, obviously, and the speed limit is 40 kilometers an hour, and so you're just cruising around, which I don't math well, but I think it's like 30 miles an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's slow, and apparently Compton rolls through a stop sign, so he gets pulled over. Hey, rules are rules. So the security forces gentleman is like, hey, you rolled through that stop sign, and Compton is like, what stop sign? And he's just like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so they're like, hey, I got to give you a ticket. So they write Compton a ticket. And Compton is, we'll call him Kurt. So he's pretty direct. He's not the, you know, the kid gloves guy. And he goes, so what am I supposed to do with this? Like, you know, do I have to pay something? And he's like, oh, no, sir. You just have to tell your commander. And he goes, oh, this. So it's not a real ticket. Like and when he says real ticket, he means like, I don't have to pay anything. Like, this is just like a point on my on base driving record. So him saying that to the security forces, gentleman, he gets upset. 'Cause you know, now you're like disrespecting the ticket. So that goes from that security forces person all the way up to the group level, over to the ops group and back down to the squadron. And Compton had to be, I think it was service stress, and effectively apologize for calling it not a real ticket. And I was like,
that security forces officer was like in the room, right? Like standing there waiting for an apology from Compton. Like, what?
Yeah. And again, like, I get it. But okay, a guy was a jerk, you know, like just let it go. But I was shocked when I heard that as like a lieutenant, and I was like, what organization am I in? Like, this is weird. Like, I don't know. It's a Fortune 100 company. It's not a military branch, you know?
Right. I think, again, I'm very appreciative of what security forces, what they do. Like, it's a thankless job, but it's very important and you absolutely need them. But they're hearing stories like that. And it's not just like security forces, right? Like if someone got offended, like at the finance office, and it's like, now it just goes up and over and you're like, just do your job. I'll do my job. And like, everyone wins. I'm cynical about that. I feel like Bender might have a story or two, like that. I don't know. Maybe Bender, do you have anything like that?
No, I'm pretty clean throughout my career, I think, generally.
I was just thinking, I was like, I remember.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, no one has time Bender, for that. It's so annoying.
Yeah. That's what Bender's like, to the point, and he calls people's BS. That's what I really appreciate about Bender. And I think you did that once or twice at Shaw.
Yeah. Some people don't appreciate that, though. We had pretty good commanders, though. I didn't get in a whole lot of trouble as a general rule. But I wasn't also allowed to talk to some people directly as a general rule either, so.
Yeah, because, again, you, like, called them on their BS. And that's what I appreciated. I think it was, like, something at the gate. I remember it was – didn't, like, Shaw, it, like – went to like single gate ops, like it just became like ridiculous. And I think you just spoke you spoke facts, and then facts hurt someone's feelings. But
yeah, I don't know. They had like, I can't remember what it was exactly, but it was single. Oh yeah, they put up like two or three stop signs. You remember that? So you had to
stop
like 100 yards from the gate, and then you stopped 50 yards from the gate, and then they stopped to check your ID. And so like the line was like 2 miles long. And they'd wait for the one car to come up. And then on the other side, they had like Humvees set up with no kicking. They're like 50 cows and a guy manning it for whatever reason, like on the other side of the gate. So for whatever reason, the threat con had reached some insane level. So it was like,
yeah,
the first guy would go up, he'd get his ID checked, he'd go through. They'd wait for him to like make it past the 50 cows or whatever. Like, okay, he's safe. And then they'd marshal the guy who's waiting at a stop sign 50 yards away up to the gate, wait till he was in place, and then the next guy would come up for it. I mean, it took hours to get through that line. It was ridiculous.
That's what I remember. Yeah. So, 'cause I remember you called it on it, and just going back, like, I'm not a tactician when it comes to force protection and gates, but I was like, this is the silliest thing in the world. One, we're stateside. So if you need to put barricades up to like impede traffic flow and slow down someone who might run the gate, like the resources exist, but putting a stop sign up, like, I don't know if I'm going to run the gate, I'm not going to give heedance to your stop sign, like a concrete barrier wall. Like I have to physically go around. That was so dumb. Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was painful. There's a lot of bad ideas out there. Just getting processes. We had one guy who he lost his ID. I might've already, I'm not sure if we're sharing the same stories we've shared before, but he's a captain. Viper pilot, he loses his ID. He goes to the ID place. He's like, "Hey, I just need to get a new ID. I lost it." And they're like, "Well, have you spoken to your first sergeant about it?" He's like, "I don't have a first sergeant. I'm an ops group. We don't have a first sergeant." They're like, "Every group has a first sergeant." He's like, "No, I'm pretty sure we don't have one." He's like, "You do. Don't come back until you have a MFR signed by your first sergeant." So he like comes back to my office or whatever. He's like, "I need some MFR signed that says like I feel bad for losing my ID. I promise not to do it again or whatever. Signed by my first sergeant." I was like, that is BS. Like, do you outrank a first sergeant? Like, write your own MFR and put your name on it and give it back to him. So he types up the MFR right there. And he's like, "I promise not to lose it again, signed myself," like whatever. And he takes it back to the MPF. And of course, like that just made them so mad. So the sergeant at the desk like can't compute. So he goes and gets his supervisor, who's a civilian, who's been there for 30 years. And the civilian's like, "We have processes in place. You will follow our processes. Find your first sergeant." Anyway, it just goes on. So he like calls me back. He's like, "Hey, they're saying they're not going to take this." I'm like, "You stand at that desk and you wait until they give you a new ID." So he's like, comes back like an hour later. He's all like, he's pretty excited, but he's like flushed. He's like, "I won. We won." So I was like, "Well, what happened?" So I guess they like eventually got up to the officer in charge of the MPF, which is a first lieutenant straight out of, you know, like OTS or whatever. And she's like, "I don't know what to do." So she signed it for him. And then they gave him the ID, but that civilian was so mad that we had bypassed the process.
I love it.
I don't get it. It's like the dog ate my homework kind of thing where it's like, "Oh, you're in trouble now." And it's like, "I lost my ID." I don't know. Like that stuff happens, but.
I mean, and then that afternoon he goes and flies a, you know, $25 million jet. So the Air Force can trust you to go fly that jet, because nobody else can do it except for him. But to get an ID, like that is too much risk. We can't accept that.
It's like the flight line driver's license program, you know, like I would just get the maintainers to drive me around purely out of spite because I'm not going to do that test. I'm like, yeah, taxi a $30 million jet around this airfield all day long. But you're telling me I can't figure out how to like give way to an aircraft or stay inside these lines. Like this is dumb. You guys are dumb.
I had a really crappy response. Maybe I should have said it, but I don't think I did. In my memory, I believe I kept it to myself. But I had the same thing. I was like, hey, why do I need a flightline driver's license? Like, I taxi jets around. And they're like, well, it's different. And in my mind, I was like, how do you know? Like, you've never taxied a jet, so how do you know if it's different, you know, driving a car? Which, again, is not a nice thing to say. I hope I didn't say it. But it's one of those things where you're like, I get it. There are processes, you know, and we have to follow them. But we also have to use common sense and say, like, hey, maybe this doesn't make sense for pilots whose job it is to understand what lines mean what and what lights on the airfield mean what. Like, I get it.
But yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, explain to me what the importance of an ILS critical area is, line means. I mean, I don't know what it means, but you know, I know it.
I know how to utilize it. Yeah,
its purpose is to make me nervous for about 30 seconds. Yeah. I'm like, is that the line I'm not supposed to cross? And then I cross it.
Can I go past this? Yeah. Is this one of those days I can't go past it? What's the rules?
Oh yeah. Man, speaking of just ridiculous, like buffoonery type things. So they're moving the markers on the airfield when at my last base when I was at Holloman. And before putting the new hold short and instrument hold short line, they paint over them. And luckily, the person who's taxiing out there is the wing commander at the time. And so he's taxiing out like do-do-do-do-do, just going to the runway. And he just sees like, you know, darker black streaks across the taxiway that used to be instrument hold short and hold short line. So he just like, well, man, I can't find the hold short line. Like, this is crazy. And sure enough, he has a CMAV, like a controlled movement violation, because they've painted over the hold short line and there's no hold short line now because they haven't painted the new hold short. And you're like, this is crazy. Luckily it happened to him, because anybody else would have probably just gotten destroyed. But it was like, you better. Oh, hey, wing commander. Yeah. You know, stuff happens, you know? So, speaking of MFRs, Bender, you know this. So Rain, before you swapped us out in Jordan, we had a guy who was at Misawa with us. I won't say his name because he's probably doing really good things in the Air Force now. He's a fast burner. But he got there 2 months before us, so he's leaving 2 months prior because he was doing like a wing weapons thing on our first deployment, and really great guy. And so we're in Japan. Obviously, Japan, if people, I'm a geography major, so I'm qualified to talk about this. So Jordan, to get back to Japan, it makes sense to fly east. But most everyone else who goes to, you know, like the Middle East, Jordan, all those places, comes from the continental United States or possibly Europe. So the standard process of going back home, quote, home, is west. And you must in process through Baltimore, because that is where everyone from that side of the world goes back home. So he's like, hey, I understand that there's a process here, but I need to go to Japan. I don't need to go to the United States. And they're like, I'm sorry, sir. Like, you need an MFR stating that you can deviate your travel. So same thing. He like writes this whole MFR and he's like, hey, I'm trying to go to Japan. I can take like because he's full up. He's like, this specific flight to take me to this specific country back. And they get the MFR and they're like, no, sorry, we can't accept that. So he literally, because he's better than me, he literally takes the rotator through Baltimore and then has to travel from Baltimore now west again across the United States, across the Pacific, back to Japan, because the process. And you're like, holy moly, this is crazy.
Oh my gosh, that inflicts so much pain.
Yeah, hey, for no real reason.
Yeah, again, these are like just like all the shenanigans. Like, there's a million of them. And you listen to like other people, like in the Army and Navy, like everyone has these stories. You're just like, if we could sprinkle common sense, the problem is you get to size of an organization that the bureaucracy is so big. And I don't know if it's is it CYA? Is that what's happening? Like, no one is willing to like delegate the responsibility down to the lowest level because they're worried about their careers. Like, what is it? That's what I want to know. I don't lose sleep over this, but I'm curious right now.
See, I feel like it's just control. So perfect example, I think it was General Goldfein. Maybe it was the CSAF before him, but it was like, hey, get rid of non-important processes. You know, like, let's get rid of the extra stuff. Like, let's stop doing these things. And somewhere between him and me as an end user, the processes were still in place. And I think there's just somewhere in between people like, no, I need this. Like, I need this information. I need these things to happen. And they just don't let go. Like, even though their boss's saying it, you as an end user, you know, you can't be like, hey, sorry, sir, but General Goldfein told me, you know. So,
yeah.
What do you think, Bender?
Yeah, I think it's CYA for sure. So we had, when I was in Afghanistan, we had, so we were obviously Vipers. So we carry some air-to-air missiles and some SDB or whatever other types of bombs. And then the Raptors were somewhere in, where were they? The deed? I don't even know where, but not the deed, yeah. I guess. They were somewhere over there. But somewhere in the planning process, it was like, hey, Raptors haven't dropped any bombs recently. Like, we want to justify, you know, why they're deployed and all that stuff. So they were like, Vipers, you're going to fight DCA in Afghanistan, which there's not a great air threat, you know, out there in Afghanistan. But load up for DCA, because we're going to have the Raptors fly in country to drop some SDB or whatever. We're like, wait, what? Like, no, no, yeah, you guys, you know, we have, there's potential threat coming from Tajikistan or whatever. I kid you not. So that could happen because the Raptors are coming. So like, load up, you'll be an air-to-air loadout or whatever, and you'll be fine DCA. So we're like, oh, fine. Like, what are the spins? Like, well, we don't have spins for you. Just fly it. Like, well, like, what's the, like, what are we doing? And if something does happen, like, what's our authority to, like, you know, stop it or engage or whatever? Like, well, stand by. We'll get you that. So, like, the night of our first DCA bulls or whatever, there's still no, like, spins or authority. They're just like, just use the spins we use wherever in another place. And we're like, what is going on? They're like, don't worry about that. Here, the one rule we do have for you comes from the, I can't remember if it was, I think it was the, the wing commander's like, the one thing that, the one rule we've put in place is that you won't do yo-yo ops or whatever. So I'm like, you couldn't, it just was so frustrating. Like, they couldn't, no, like, command decision was made at all. Like, nobody would take on the authority of, like, developing spins or defining what the threat was or anything like that. The only decision any commander between my squadron and the CFAC or whatever was no yo-yo ops. So a flight lead's decision, like that's like the one decision I am supposed to be able to make. They're like, eh, we don't trust ourselves to make any decision except for your, you know, personal decision, whatever. And that, I mean, and that's now, yeah, it's across the Air Force like that. Like, the only guidance we ever get is like guidance that at our level, like, you know, we can make, you know, the same thing, like losing your ID. Like, they'll make those decisions for us, you know, but they don't trust us to make that decision. But all the huge, super important decisions, like, they're not willing to make that, like, or clarify that. No way.
Right.
It's too dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, let me take this off your shoulders, and I'll handle this problem that should be done between a lieutenant and a major. Oh, well. Yeah. Hey, shift gears here a little bit. How much money would it take for you to sell your soul and train with a near-peer threat and teach them Western tactics? I won't name any countries. But there's a news article out there. Apparently some of, you know, our friends are working with a near peer threat, or what we would deem as a near peer threat, teaching tactics.
I would never, but
me neither. No. Let it stay for the record. I've never thought about that. We were talking about that in the bar last night. Actually, we're like, there is a number, right? Yeah. Oh yeah, I have a number.
It's like $270,000. That seems a little low to go sell.
That's not my number. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh man.
I have. Yeah. A so for those listening.
Yeah, there's an article out there that there's 30 British pilots approximately that are working with the Chinese, teaching them tactics and things like that. So I think we would all agree, for those listening, that's, I would say, considered selling your soul to sell your bros out. But yeah, sorry, Vader, what were you saying?
Well, yeah, I would say there's going to be fallout. I mean, like, legitimate fallout from your home country. So the reality is, like, you have to be independently wealthy. You know what I mean? It'd have to be,
yeah.
I mean, sub 300K a year. Like, that's a lot of money. That's a ton of money. But you may not be able to go back home. You know what I mean? So it's like totally not worth it. That's crazy. Yeah, and
that's
like,
not even Snowden money, you know? Yeah, you gotta at least make Snowden money.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going back to the squadron barbecue reunion after that one, I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, not at all. I mean, again, 300,000 is not a small, I guess, lump of change. But if you're never going to be able to go home, or you're going to live on an island by yourself for quite a long time. It's kind of crazy, but that stuff happens all the time.
Yeah. I am assuming this is a broad assumption. I'm assuming they're like the dirtbag dudes, you know, the dudes in the squadron that the bros don't like anyway. And then they're like, fine, I don't care. I'm going to go teach China then.
I can think of a couple people that might.
go do that for sure. I wonder, one, because I mean, maybe those dudes got burned by their military or just burned by their government, et cetera. So yeah, they might not care at all. The other piece, I'll say maybe I'll give like a benefit of doubt. Like, so it's run through a shell company in South Africa. Like, depending on how they interface, like, it could potentially be like, if I don't know, are they flying in South Africa or flying, you know, in the Middle East? There are a lot of expats that go to South Africa or go to Dubai, et cetera. So maybe they've been giving up this information, like thinking they're training, you know, the South Africans. I don't know. But at some point, like, you got to be smart enough to at least realize that maybe this is nefarious.
Yeah, the one other thing that I saw recently, somebody sent me the YouTube video of the Chinese ACM, the air combat maneuvering. ACM.
Yeah.
But they use English. So they ACM in English, and they're like using all the same terminology that you would hear in like a US engagement. And you're like, that's pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, you saw the Chinese bought a bunch of land. Was it next to, what's the base up in North Dakota?
Minot?
They bought like 150 acres. And I mean, I remember they would go up and down the Eastern seaboard. I mean, they do it everywhere. I mean, yeah, everyone does it, right? They're out there observing tactics and how things are done. I think the latest thing, it was a Grand Forks, North Dakota. I'm butch. Someone's going to like lose their mind over that. But a Chinese company ended up buying, 100 plus acres right next to an Air Force base, which we operate a lot of drones out of. And so, I mean, it's everything flows back to the party and the government. So that'll undoubtedly be utilized as a resource to gather information, et cetera. So I think a lot of people realize that, especially in the last like 2 years, they see what our dependency was or what our dependency is on other nations. And then also see maybe some of the reality of how certain nations act and behave, not only towards their people or towards everyone else.
Yeah.
Again, I have to go there. So I have to be careful.
Yeah. Legitimately. That's true. Yeah. I know one thing. That now that I'm getting through the F-15C TX, I think China's shaking in their boots because I'm getting pretty lethal in this airplane. So
just hammered away.
Oh yeah. So so far all my experience is in the simulator. So big caveat there. First flight is coming up in a couple weeks. It is wildly different. I mean, aggressively different than the F-16. So for everybody out there who doesn't know, so the F-16 is what's called AOA limited. So angle of attack limited, to the point where you can pull back on the flight controls and the jet will limit the output to stop you from putting yourself out of control or overshooting the available, angle of attack or AOA. The F-15C does not do that. It has like hydraulics. I should probably know this, but it's like cables and hydraulics, I think. And but either way, it has like a small flight control computer doing like very minimal inputs. So you kind of have like, hey, your rudders will deflect 15 degrees without the flight control computer, and they'll deflect 30 degrees with it. So if your flight control computer kicks offline, you don't have as much maneuverability. So you want the flight control computer, especially if you're going to go like really fast, because pilot induced oscillations can get bad. So that it helps with stuff like that. So Rain will ask you, because Bender, he's a 35 guy now, so he's all about AOA and rudders and everything. So as an F-16 dude, when you think about flying like an AOA, like, oh, I can do AOA excursions and I can bleed energy, what do you expect when they say like, hey, yeah, step on the rudders and you know, you'll do the thing. When you're in the jet, or you imagine being in a dogfight and you see an adversary like fly across your left side at like 2000 feet, what are you going to do with those flight controls, or what are you attempting?
Well, I'm going to try to get behind them and shoot them and kill them. Get them in a Wes, right?
Yeah.
But not having, or being AOA limited, like I never thought about it in the Viper. I'm just like, I'm going to do this. Like you just pull as hard as you can to try and get there, and you don't have to think about it. I would imagine now you're thinking a lot. You have to be, I don't know, I'm not a very good pilot, but like you got to be a champion not to like over G or not to part, like, you know, put the jet out of control. Because like fangs are through the floor as you hit the merge there and you just want to kill that person. I don't know. Yeah. That'd be really challenging, I think. I don't want to give you guys too much credit, but
they tell me to my face, and it doesn't even hurt my feelings. They're like, you actually have to like be a pilot and fly this plane. And I'm like, ugh, that's the worst. So, so I'm like fighting in the sim. I'm merging with an adversary, and we're slower speeds now. So it's like the second merge. So for anybody who doesn't know, a merge could be 180 degrees, kind of passing north south on a highway. You could kind of be 90 degrees out. Merges are, you know, they can be varied, but either way, I'm slow. So I'm like, oh, I'm slow. I can't over G. So less than like, call it 350 ish, a little higher than that, you can just like pull the control straight to the seat pan and you won't over G. And so I was like, this is sick. I'm just going to like stop the jet. And so seat pan. And I just like, and when I say stomp, I mean stomp on the left rudder pedal, because this jet is just going to like whip around and I'm going to be pointing at him and I'm just going to be ready to kill. So
it's like
I
a raptor.
That's right. And I go seat pan. That's what we call it. We guys. And seat pan. And then I stomp on the left rudder pedal and the jet rips off to the right. I mean, like total departure. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is insane. So, apparently in the C model, there's two things. There's out of control and a full departure. Out of control just means the jet's not doing what you want. So if I pull back and move, like put the left rudder and the nose doesn't go anywhere, I am just out of control. Just ease off the back stick and the jet will probably get back in control and fly. A departure is the jet starts doing stuff that you don't want it to do. So like right there, left rudder, I'm trying to go left and the nose just like rips off to the right and I get into this like excessive roll. And I was like, this is going to be a challenge. Like this is not like a one day I'll figure this out. So definitely negative transfer.
So then did he roll in behind you and kill you?
Well, luckily it was like a simulator. Yeah. Luckily it was like a simulator generated thing. So he's just like cruising along. So I'm able to turn back around and go kill him. But yeah, there's a lot.
I heard our vice wing commander, he's in reservists, when you get up to, hopefully he doesn't listen to this, but you know, you get pretty old in the reserves when you start to get to that level. So he's been around a while. Real young looking guy. He looks great. Pretty old. Anyway, so he's been flying Viper since they were, you know, the A model probably. But he was talking about he was a homestead reservist. So they were there when the F-22 was getting its final, like, what do you call it? When they, whatever.
IOC.
It's final, like, what is it?
IOC.
Yeah, IOC. So the final, like, combat checkouts for the F-22, I guess they brought some in to, it was at Nellis, and they had, like, Chief of Staff of the Air Force, I think it was Jumper at that time, like, the Secretary of Defense. They were all there for this, like, last bull of the F-22's, like, final combat checkout or whatever. So they had 8 aggressors and 8 of these homestead jets, and he's one of the homestead guys, and he said he was just like, it was like a 2 weeks straight of just like driving and dying and never seeing anybody. But on the last day, he was like up at 37,000 feet, just like cruising, and he sees above him this Raptor go, you know, like point straight at him. It goes through the cons. So he sees the flash and then he sees the cons. And so he's like, oh yeah, I finally see one. And so he's like 1.3 or something. So he's like, I got the energy for this. So he just like pulls straight up at the Raptor, like to get his nose on him or whatever. And then of course, like over commands this two bag Viper up at 40 something thousand feet. And so right as they merge, he goes out of control and the jet starts like falling out of the sky. But it starts falling out of the sky. I want to use my hands, but since we're on a podcast, I can't. Basically, his nose starts to, he just starts to spin or whatever. And his nose just tracks this Raptor as it's trying to merge with him. So it looks like he's just like, I'm in a gun whiz pretty much like right now as he's like just falling out of the sky, not able to do anything. And eventually another Raptor kills him or whatever. And then he recovers like at 20 something thousand feet. And so he like lands and he's like, gosh, I hope, you know, standard. He's like, I hope nobody noticed that that happened. And I'm not gonna say anything, obviously. But when they go to the debrief, everybody walks in and then the like lead test guy is like, you follow me. And he's like, oh gosh, here we go. So he goes into this back room and it's like a teleconference and General Jumper is there and the lead F-22 like engineers, all those guys are there and they're like, what happened? And he's like, what do you mean? We just merged up at whatever, 40,000 feet. He's like, how did you gun a Raptor at 40,000 feet? Like, what were you doing? He was like, you know, I was just like, we just merged. I just turned across his tail or whatever. Just, you know, whatever, just doing my pilot stuff. And they're like, stop it. Like, tell us what happened. He's like, fine. I went out of control. And they're like, oh, they probably like understand.
It makes sense.
They were just like terrified. All of a sudden this Viper just creamed, you know, this F-22 up at that altitude. So they're like, oh, no big deal. So Jumper like turns the VTC off. He's like, let's go. And they all like, just leave him sitting there. He's like, okay, cool. Cool. I guess I'm off the hook.
Yeah. Just delay your caps, the critical action procedures for the recovery there. Get your gun shot. And then you got plenty of altitude to recover. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Great.
I like how they didn't care at all that he was out of control and there was no knock it off or anything. It was like, oh, so you didn't accidentally kill a Raptor? Cool, you're good. You know,
yeah,
nobody cares anymore. Oh, man.
We did a combat hammer. This is like 2015. No, I'm sorry. Checkered flag. Where you go to shoot missiles and then the afternoon do that. Yeah, hammer was out at hill. But I was thinking, so we did... You know, like a week, it was awesome. Shoot missiles like in the morning or the afternoon, depended, but you do a huge large force exercise. The Raptors, 35, Eagles from Eglin. And we were over at Tyndall doing this at the time. But I remember we were just red air like multiple days in a row. And then finally it's like, hey, we need like a blue air look. And so naturally the Raptors were red air. And you're like, well, this is pointless. I think I went out with gigawatts as a mission check for me. And you're just like, I don't know. I'll get a valid shot when I do my fencing check or something. Like, this is like completely pointless. So you can like run the timeline in your head. You're like, all right, I'm probably getting shot in the face right now. Yep, I'm getting shot in the face. Cool. You know, hey, thanks.
It's just crazy. But Bender, you guys, I mean, again, a fourth gen fighter, I mean, even fourth gen with like an electronically scanned array radar is going to be a little bit better. But I mean, it's not going to hang, you know, that's not our standard threat. Bender, I assume
they talked about the I believe button in the F-35, like during the TX, you know, they're like, obviously we complain all the time about the F-35. It's just our, you know, it's the right of the TX into the Fat Amy, but they're like, one day you're going to be out there and, you know, you're going to be making fun of whatever. And then all of a sudden you're going to see it and you're gonna be like, I believe, like, this is awesome. And so that happened in my first red flag, and it was Raptor flying red air. And like, we pick him up pretty far. We like shoot them, and I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. As I trespass all my numbers, you know, standard red flag. I'm like, they're going to shoot me. I'm going to die in this debrief. But in the debrief, they never, it was awesome. We killed them, and they never even had a clue we were there. I'm like, okay, if we go to war, like, this is the machine I probably want to be in. It's pretty money.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, and I think if you do your job right, you know, like in fifth gen, if you do the things and you put your jet where you want it to be, like, it seems impressive, you know, outside looking in. It's, you know, you don't, we were talking to Blitz Ayers and we were talking about like managing risk and things. And he's like, yeah, when you're young, when you're a lieutenant, a young captain, you know, it's like, hey, can you want to take some risk? And it's like, cool, how much you got? You know, you're just like, yeah, you're happy to kind of onboard risk. And then you go to red flags and then you see just how many airplanes are flying around and how close everyone is. And you're like, this is mildly harrowing. Like, this is wild, especially in like a fourth gen fighter or now where Link 16 is not on a lot of platforms. So now you're just like, you don't have any sort of Link 16 information of who's around you. And you're just like, think small for 90 minutes. Woof.
Yeah, especially if you do one of those red flags, it's like a coalition one and you have all these different nations playing around. You're like, you get these small altitude blocks, say small, you're like 2,000 feet and you're used to having like 10,000 feet for your formation. You go out there nighttime and they're not used to doing a whole lot of night, or even you, like, it's not a, like, think skinny. I'm just hoping someone's not screaming through my altitude block at 450 knots. And I do remember, like, one of ours, we had he was the chief of OGV prior to Bender, very experienced dude, great dude. And he came back, he got spatial deed in one of the vols. And he was like 12,000 feet out of his altitude block. He hit the PARS button, so the jet automatically recovered, which, thank God that existed. But, you know, in the debrief, they're like, hey, you're out of your altitude block, what are you doing? He's like, I was spatial deed. And everyone's like, oh, like, you know, if it can happen to him, it can happen to anyone. But again, think skinny, because someone go blitzing through your altitude block. A lot of, yeah, it's amazing. More crap doesn't happen.
Yeah. And yeah, even, well, as block 50 guys, I mean, we have these seed caps that are, I mean, it's crazy. In F-35, we just don't fly that close together, which is kind of nice. But in the block 50, I mean, you'd have that mini block 2,000 feet for four of you, and you would have, you know, two elements on the opposite sides of these seed caps in the middle of the night. So the closest calls I ever had were, you know, like crossing paths with wingmen in your seed caps, you know. Ugh.
Yeah.
Because we'd have like a 500-foot mini altitude, like, block between the two elements or whatever, and you're just like passing 500 feet away from another. Like,
500 feet?
No.
Yeah, doing 400 knots, like, that's not a lot of altitude. And then you're like NVGs with no depth perception, all the different stars, cultural lighting, etc., like trying to figure out, like, is that another plane or is that a star or, you know, a tower, or what is that down there? Not a good spot.
Yeah, I'd say one of my least favorite red flag sorties, because Bender and I mean, we went to a few red flags when we were in Alaska, and they were awesome. I mean, just a rage fest. I think there's slightly less aircraft than like a Nellis flag, but it just seems like there's a lot more space. You can move around a little bit more. And then I went to like a Nellis red flag and I was like, this is intense. And so it's an IMC vol, so instrument meteorological conditions. So we take off, four of us take off. And about the time we hit the holds, we go into the weather. And the assumption is like, we're going to be in the weather all day. So we split up. So there's two of us. I'm number three. My number four is my DO at the time when I was at McIntyre. And, we're in the weather just fighting. And I'm like trying to do the job. There's surface threats that are radiating and shooting at you. So you're trying to defend, but stay relatively level. And then there's an aggressor that I see that I'm trying to figure out if he's alive, if he is a bad guy, if he is a good guy. And then I realize I'm like, he is below halfway down the scope on a 20 scope. And I was like, oh, we are like merging. Like, he's less than 10 miles away from me. So this is happening. And if for an F-16, they have two radios. So not a ton of radios when there's like five different frequencies you could be on. So most of the time, Block 50 F-16s are over probably the escort freak or the strike freak. And then their secondary radio is not to like talk to your flight. It's to talk to the seed roulette people, because you kill the radio at red flag. So you have to tell the seed RTOs or range training officers what you're shooting at, so they know what SAMs to kill or not kill. So you can't really talk just to your flight. So while we're doing this, my DO has a complete MMC failure, which is your mission computer. So effectively, it's like he has an operating motor, flight controls, and engine. He has no navigation. He has no screens. And so he's, so this happens. So literally I'm pointing towards the threats and he is pointing back the, so in trail of me, and he just goes on the RTO frequency. So the range training officer frequency. And he goes, I lost everything. I've got nothing. He's like, I'm going to say it. And he's a prior Navy dude, tons of experience. I mean, he flew the F-14, F-18, then the F-16, you know, all of us are IPs. And he goes, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. And he goes on, this is all in the aux freak, the secondary freak. And he goes on the prior radio, which everyone is fighting on. We're on the escort freak this time. And so the words knock it off are like, should be sacred. And you say knock it off and the fight's over. And so he goes, knock it off, knock it off. Iron 4-4 is knocking it off. And that's like a direct quote. And like, if it's, if you could be unsure, you know, if you hear like, knock it off, you know, you're like, did somebody say something? I didn't hear, you know, but it is like very clear, like Iron 4-4 is knocking this fight off. And there's like this pregnant pause. And an RTO on the air-to-air side yells, negative. And then everybody starts calling their missile shots and the fight just picks back up. So now IMC rules, you're supposed to do like, hey, so many degrees of bank, so many degrees of pitch. But he is now, he has no MMC, he has nothing. So I go max AB and I just like limiter pull around the corner to put him within my radar field of view before he falls off the link. So I lock him up and tell me if I've already told this story here. But so I lock him up and right as his like his Link 16 PPLI disappears. And so I'm like, all right, 4, I'm locked to you. And he's worried about going. So we're just south of the Reveilles. So if you go farther south, obviously that's not great. So he keeps right. like listing, what is that? Is that that's north. So he keeps listing like towards the Reveilles. And I'm like, you're going to punch out of the airspace. Like you're going to fly out of the airspace. Stop going left. And he's like, no, I don't want to go right. Like, I don't want to run into the other thing. So I'm like max AB, just chasing him down through the airspace in the weather. And then I get to like a mile and trail and it's, there's just a sucker hole in the clouds. And I'm like visual. And I like rejoin on him, like fly in there to like, to close formation. And I'm like, all right, I'm on your right wing, like call visual. I'm like, all right, you know, route. And as we start a right-hand turn where that little triangle cutout is for the tanker track, you know, in that kind of northeast side of the airspace. So we're like edging, like I don't want to fly into the tanker track. And I roll out pointing roughly south and I realize we are on the Marshall limit line for Vol 3. And I look at the clock and we are on push time. Like I literally watch the clock like roll to zeros for the new push time. And I just see this like sea of like Link 16 tracks start pushing across like towards us. And luckily, you guys know him, Flash McVeigh is in one of the other F-16s. I think he was Nitro Flight. And in the weather, he's just like in place 90 right. Like he just like, nope, we're not pushing. We're done. So we're co-altitude because we're supposed to leave as he shows up. So we're all sharing the same piece of sky. And we fly perpendicular to the push at Nitro's altitude. And I literally see like sharks in the ocean, just strike eagles flying under us, just like little blips of them through the clouds. And we obviously make it back home. But I was furious. Like I could not be more mad at whoever it was that called that. And the debrief was pretty long that night, not surprisingly. But yeah. we made it back.
What did they say about... Yeah, the knock it off.
Yeah.
Negative. Like you can't override that. It's again saying F in front of mom. You can't take it back.
You can't triple stamp a double stamp. Yeah. So the so this was the thing that really pissed people off. So we get back in and like the standard thing is like you show up and you first thing you do is talk about the admin. You know, like, hey, any questions from the brief, you know, like, hey, let's talk about getting there or coming back. And then they're like, obviously we're going to talk about the thing. And they're like, yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. You know, obviously that's a big deal. So we don't want to like not spend time on it. And then we get to the shop val and it's like weird. So the shop validation is where you like, everybody sits down and pairs all the missiles they took and sees what the truth data is. And then the shop validation's over and then they go, all right, ready, you're cleared off. And this one of the patches in the room, I don't know him really well. He's an awesome dude, but I won't use his name here. He stands up and he like points to literally every part of the like red air and he goes, sit down, we're not done. And I was like, sick. And and that's when we get into it. But they were literally gonna let like all of red air and like half of the fight leave before talking about this negative. And then we get a little obfuscation and we get a little like, well, you know, people were unsure, blah, blah, blah. So we never actually find out who said it. But either way, it was suboptimal. And we get to the bottom of it, how you can't turn off a knock-it-off. And the worst part was it was because the third push was going to lose out on training if we knocked off the fight. And I was like, I'm so furious. Cause you know, if we run jets together, if a guy crashes, like, oh yeah, that's going to hold up, you know, like people are going to be like, oh, you're right. I can't imagine why you would lose the third pushes training. So just ridiculous.
Yeah. That story spread pretty quickly. I think like that same night we were getting texts about it and stuff. And I think the Tigers were like, we're never going back to Red Flag until cause the commander of Red Flag, I think, acted unprofessionally is my understanding. Or I guess I'll tell a story from what I heard from him. But I guess he would give out green chips for superior performer and red chips for the kind of the lymphax of the bull. And so my understanding is that he gave a green chip. I don't even know who he gave it to, probably C2 or somebody who was useless, but he wanted to make feel better about their lives. And then throws the red chip at, wasn't it your flight lead or something?
Yeah.
Or maybe it was at the Tigers or somebody.
No.
Like, and you guys need to do better about like understanding when you should call knock it off or whatever. And the story is that he like throws the red chip at the guy and the guy just stares at him and let it like it just hits him in the chest and just lets it fall to the floor. It's just like, F you, like we're not coming back to Red Flag again until he's gone.
Yeah. So it was almost exactly that. Yeah. So the number one, the flight lead was the squadron commander. So number one was the squadron commander. Number four was the DO who it happened to. And yeah, he's like, hey, number one, he throws him like the bad chip, like you screwed up chip. And, he's like, you got to control your flight, you know, like that's on you. If someone knocks off your knock it off, you got to knock it back off again. And, yeah, he throws a chip and he like holds up a binder. Cause one, I was flabbergasted that he just overhand throws chips to the like last row. It's like a 40-yard throw to the back of the room. And anybody who's held poker chips, you're like, that's dangerous. So he literally holds up like his like Bob binder, you know, he holds it up and it hits a binder and falls to the floor. And like somebody in the row in front of him, like picks it up. He's like, here you go, sir. And he's like, don't give me that. And, like drop it on the ground. And, yeah, McIntyre left. They were like, we're done here. And they just went home. They didn't, it was like a Wednesday or something. And they were like, Thursday, we're getting ready to go home and we're just leaving. Like they're not. So yeah, they were rightfully so furious.
Wow. Was that, man, I'm trying to think. I did one. Did we do a red flag together when you were at McIntyre? Or I might have been. It might have been.
I
did
only,
one with McIntyre.
Yeah,
been like 2015 or 16.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get there yet. I wasn't out there until late 16. But yeah, that would have been before. But
man, that's. I was going to tell my story, red flag, my worst sortie, but it doesn't even compare. It's when I lost my lip light and then we were like on a switch to runway 3 operations.
Oh, man.
Which was a significant emotional event. I'm like, my lip light died on departure. I'm like, I might abort this sortie and head back. And then it switched to runway 3 recovery when it wasn't supposed to. Like, oh, this is terrible.
Runway 3, I was like, please no. If it's runway 3, just let me land opposite direction. I personally accept a 20 knot tailwind for a runway 2-1. Oh, man. Well, that's
Red Flag is it's a great, just so much crap happens at Red Flag. It's awesome. Good stories. We had one guy who took off and didn't lift, like this is like his first red flag. So he just got FMQT and we're like the first jets on this giant departure and he forgets to like raise his gear. So, and then he overspeeds the crap out of it. Anyway, so he's like, I can't catch up in the rejoin. And they're like, your gear's down. So that's your problem. So that happens like, again, the first jet of the entire go. So he slows down to like 200 knots. So this entire train that starts towards the airspace is like let out by this guy who's now like creeping back at 200 knots. And all the other formations of fighters are just like getting like just crushed up against it. So they're like starting to vector people off the departure to try to get him around. I won't say his name either actually I probably will, but we ended up naming jackets. Him obviously at that red flag. And so the
Switchy Jackets.
Sorry, I'm in a softball tournament. Here you go.
Hey, hi. You're on a podcast.
hold on, I'll be right there. Anyway, so his name is pretty funny because they ended up naming him Limbo for like how low can the bar go, you know? Like just always trying to go as low as you can go. I was like, that is a good name. I love it.
Oh,
that's brutal.
We had one of those.
We had they always are. They still are. Yeah. We had one. We had a departure. And this was I would say this red flag, we came back from our deployment, and this new commander, you probably can accredit him with, I don't know, maybe at least 20 people getting out of the Air Force, but this was it. This is where it kicked off. We had a young wingman who did the same thing. First go, his first red flag. He left the gear down on departure. And it happens, right? And then he ended up getting dinged, rightfully or wrongfully, but it was something like it kind of changed the course of the squadron. I feel like in most fighter squadrons, like you're going to mess something up at some point. Like metal's going to get bent, but like so long as like no one dies and it's not malicious, it's usually like, hey, you might be grounded for a week and you're doing like ground duty. You're going to stand in front of the squadron on Friday and tell everyone what you did so people can learn from it. But like, there's nothing permanent on your record, like busting him on a check ride, and he got busted. And that was kind of like the turning point. We're like, oh, I guess we see how it's going to be. Cause the heavy community, like they're pretty Q2 and Q3 happy. I mentioned on other podcasts, but like if you like a Q1 check ride pass, Q2, you might have to clean up some items. It's still like not great. And a Q3 means you fail. You're not qualified. And commanders can hand those out at any point if they deem necessary. And that's what happened in the scenario. And for us, like, it was like, ooh, that's something new in the fighter world. You're like, so it only got worse from there.
That's when I showed up at the squadron, when it had reached the worst from there. Like, this is going to be awesome. I'm going to go be in rain squadron. Like, it's totally awesome. The gamblers are great. I get in and it's like, what is wrong with this place? People would like get done flying. They come out of debrief and they would just like freaking leave the building. Like no talking, no fun. Like what is, it's hard to like wreck a fighter squadron's morale, but that squadron. Zero of it.
Yeah. He wrecked it really quick. Cause Vader, I mentioned Blitz is going to be on the Kodiak Shack. I've had Blitz. Blitz was my boss when we were downrange and ripped you guys out. Blitz was awesome. And, you know, we're downrange, like, oh, this guy's going to be great, you know, because we're leading up to his change of command. And then talking to some of the other guys and, like, the Tigers or the Shooters had flown with him when he was not a commander. Like, oh, yeah, he's great. You guys, he's awesome. And he was anything but awesome. Which, you're not always going to have, like, good bosses, you know, and you have to figure out what they need. But it goes back to, like, in my opinion, he was purely CYA. He viewed being a squadron commander as only a hurdle to his upward mobility, because if anything bad happens in your squadron as the squadron commander, whether it's your fault or not, like you get blamed or it's going to impact your next assignment, your stratification, if you're going to go to school, yada, yada, yada. He knew that, and everything he did was based upon that, in my opinion.
It's unfortunate. It's almost like some sick joke. That it's like you almost never find two squadron commanders that are good in a row. It's normally like a touchdown of a squadron commander. And then it's like, it's almost like they know, hey, we got to put this guy somewhere, at least put him in a squadron that just had a good commander. And then, you know, hopefully after that, you get a good commander again, which it sounds like that did happen for the 77th after him, that it kind of rebounded with the next commander. But yeah, it's, it's disheartening to see just how bad a bad commander can be for a squadron.
Yeah, just one guy. I saw, so at that time, Hyper Anderley was the Tiger commander, which was kind of entertaining. But now I see, yeah, he's like the Wing commander out there. I saw him in the news, Bender.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome. Yeah, I think we love, well, I love Hyper. I'm pretty sure all the bros do up the hill. Yeah, he's a good dude. We just had a jet crash a couple days ago, which is obviously that's a huge deal. I think it's the first Air Force F-35 crash. I think I could be wrong, but anyway, it's a big deal. So we had a pilot meeting yesterday, kind of about it with him talking. Anyway, he's just there's just some, you know, he's not like a weapons school grad or like a lineage, you know, like in the Air Force, there's a pretty standard way of becoming a squadron commander. You know, you guys are familiar with your, like, quick to IP, quick to weapons school. You go back and teach a weapons school as fast as possible. And those are the guys that usually end up being squadron commanders. And a lot of them are great. But those aren't necessarily, they don't always make the best commanders. Anyways, Hyper is not one of those, right? He's a vape. And then just a really good dude. But he's just a great leader. And some of my favorite squadron commanders are, sorry, somebody got a hit. And this is through a softball, so they're going to scream for a while. anyway, so
it's,
I mean,
like my son's baseball game.
Yeah. But like Fokker, Busey, I know we don't generally throw names out there, but Fokker Busey's awesome commander, doesn't have that kind of lineage, but it's just about like understanding, I think the best commanders, they get, you know, they understand the purpose of the squadron, and then they're just willing to take the risk to make sure that the mission happens and the dudes are taken care of, you know. And you can always sniff out the ones who are dedicated to that, and then the ones who are a lot more gun shy about that.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, guys, I hate to kill a party, but I got to get going. I got a simulator in a bit, so gotta get to work. But hey, thanks for spending the time, guys. We appreciate I always appreciate you guys hanging out and chatting. We're gonna have to do this again because once I hit the flight line, there's gonna be more buffoonery. So.
Yeah, it's going to be a dedicated podcast to listen to what happened to Vader that week.
Yeah. All right. Well, you guys have a good one. Have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you guys later.
Awesome. See you guys.
Hope everyone enjoyed this episode. It's always fun to talk to Vader and Bender from the Kodiak Shack podcast. Thanks for those supporting the podcast over on Patreon. And as always, thank you to those who've taken the time to drop a rating or review over on iTunes and Spotify to help the podcast out. That being said, we're out of here. We'll see you next time.
The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgearin.com/rain.
I want to tell you about a service I've been using for over a year now, Aurora. I signed up and they immediately identified over 60 data brokers out there selling my information. The best part is they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. I have a link down below where you get a 14-day free trial. It's risk-free and you can cancel anytime. So it's worth taking a shot and seeing what information is out there. But it's more than just that. They have an app which includes antivirus, VPN, password management, all built into one package. You can use the app or you can use the browser to stay safe out there in the digital space. Again, I have a link down below. You can check it out for 2 weeks free. And if you don't like it, you can cancel anytime.